Time for our Share Something segment. Each week, we ask one of our guest experts to share something for our listeners. This week, we've enlisted one of our science regulars to give us a rundown of some citizen science projects we can get involved in.
Gemma Tarlak is here. She's a senior associate editor at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. Gemma, welcome back to Central Time.
Always great to be with you. Thanks.
Well, before we start getting into specific projects, what is citizen science?
Citizen science, basically, it's a win-win situation. You know, scientists, their funding is getting cut. It's difficult to get the research done just financially. But also, there is just so much data out there, and there's more all the time, that, you know, a group of 5 or 6 or even 10 scientists working on a project, they just don't have the hours in the day to process all the data. And some of it has to be processed by humans. The computers can't. So they ask people, hey, can you help us out? Can you be part of the science? So for the scientists, it's a win. For the people helping out, the citizens, it's also a win because you get to experience what it's like to do research. And I think there's a tremendous feeling of ownership when you see the results and, you know, you hear maybe on the nightly news them talking about new findings about the monarch butterfly population or whatever, something you participated in. And you get this tremendous sense of ownership and understanding how awesome science is.
Now, we've been hearing about citizen science for a long time, but is it working? Are people starting to get involved in greater numbers?
Yeah, you know, in fact, I think last year was really the first year that we saw several studies coming out that were based on crowdsourced data processing or citizen science that actually had real results. Everything from citizen scientists looking at cancer cell slides of patients and being able to diagnose. Obviously, you know, they're going to run it past a physician, but being able to identify specific cancerous cell structures that were not found, say, by the computer. So we're seeing more and more studies coming out with real results, and I think it's getting more popular, especially, you know, among the younger, the children and young adults, because there's also an aspect that's part of, like, the maker revolution, really DIY, getting your hands dirty, really getting into the process of things.
So this month you had a piece highlighting a selection of citizen science projects. How did you decide what to include?
Well, you know, there are so many. There are thousands of citizen science projects. So we narrowed our focus in a couple different ways. First, in terms of time, we knew the story would be running in our October issue, and we wanted to spotlight things that were either about to be available or had just become available so that someone could read about it and jump right to that project and join it. So timing was one issue. And we also wanted to give our readers a sense of the tremendous variation, not only in fields of science, but in ways to participate. So everything from looking at a computer screen and marking changes in the image on your screen to walking your dog at night with your smartphone, seeing something flash in the sky, and using your smartphone to track it. So there are all different ways to participate and all different fields you can participate in.
Well, one that you are especially excited about, I guess, is this baby watching project. Who doesn't like to watch you cute babies on the internet?
Well, you know, it's an interesting project, Baby World, and it's by the folks who brought us Games with Words and a couple other vocabulary-based and linguistic citizen science projects and also online quizzes. And I know I have several friends who are absolutely addicted to Games with Words. And this is really looking at how children or babies understand speech and pick it up. And, you know, we think a lot of times just looking at the baby and saying, oh, you know, baby, coo, 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 who's a good baby or whatever, that is how they understand language. But when you think about it, your baby is in the room and you're talking to your spouse or your friend, whoever, saying things like, hey, how was work today? That's a very abstract question. How does the baby understand that? So basically, people look at these videos of children in their environment and note what interests the child most. If it interests the child most, it is most likely to get embedded in the child's brain in some way, including adapting to language.
So this is a case where there's a lot of data, probably hours and hours, hundreds of hours, I don't know, of these videos, and that's why the scientists are like, hey, public, help us out.
Yeah, you know, I would say more than half of the projects we picked, it is a question of just the sheer amount of data that the actual researchers just don't have the time to process it. And Baby World is definitely one of those issues. But, you know, you as the citizen scientist do not have to watch hours and hours of babies. They're actually 15 to 30 second clips, just very short video clips. and you basically just look at it, you know, 15 to 30 seconds, shorter than your average YouTube clip of some guy skateboarding and hurting himself. And, you know, you just say, okay, the baby was very interested in the mother, or the baby was very interested in the shirt the man was wearing. Whatever it is, you mark it down, and all that gets processed, and that's how they are doing the study. It's pretty fascinating.
And I guess all of these experiments, they presume good faith by the participants that people aren't going to try to mess up your baby data.
Well, yeah, and actually all citizen science experiments, there's actually protocols, and I believe it's a researcher at Cornell University who created kind of a best practices guide for researchers undertaking citizen science projects. And one of the things they do is usually it's not just one reviewer looking at a video. Usually they'll have three, four, five people who don't know. You know, it's not like, you know, two people in a room are looking at the same video. It's a person in Albuquerque and a person in Poughkeepsie. They both, you know, randomly are selected to look at that video. And maybe another one in, I don't know, Salt Lake City. And they look at the video. So if there's an outlier, you know, if there's that joker who just wants to screw up the data, they will stand out.
Interesting.
And they can be eliminated from the study results.
Well, let's check out some of the other projects we can get involved in. There's one called eMammal. What is that?
Well, this is all about setting up a camera trap, either in your backyard or, with permission, in a local park. And the folks studying this are looking at how animal wildlife populations, everything from coyotes to bears, et cetera, how they are moving between urban, suburban, rural, and wild environments. And they're just trying to get really an idea of how these animals are moving between these very different environments, also their numbers, how they might be interacting differently with, say, prey or predators in those environments, and just giving folks a much better idea. It's like a wildlife survey or census that also takes into account behavior changes as well.
And there's also a media reporting app. How does that one work?
Well, this is the one that you just, you know, you've got your smartphone, you've got the app on your smartphone, you see a bright flash in the sky, basically a fireball, it's a particular type of meteor, and you engage the app, wave your smartphone kind of basically from where you saw it start to finish at the speed you saw it. You do it a few times, which is measuring and the accuracy and creating consistency, and the actual app processes the data and sends it to the American Meteor Society, which then adds it to kind of a, again, a census, basically, of fireballs that are, you know, winging around over us.
Well, that's staying on top of astronomy in real time. There's another project that looks super cool and maybe shows our superiority to the infernal computers, one tracking artifacts at the Museum of London. How can we help the Museum of London out?
Yeah, well, actually, this is at the British Museum, and they have thousands and thousands of artifacts from the Bronze Age, specifically axe heads. And you might think it sounds like the easiest job in the world for a computer to look at a photo of an axe head on a plain background and kind of outline that axe head so that it can be digitally modeled. This, believe it or not, is actually too much for the poor computer to handle.
Aha.
Poor computer. They have found the process of kind of marking that outline and separating the object from the background is called photomasking. And they have found humans do it way better than computers. So they've got all these thousands of axe heads from the Bronze Age, and they are looking for citizen scientists to just help them digitally mark out the outline. They're then going to create digital models of all these artifacts that can be shared and studied. And, you know, the actual artifacts will be able to be safely protected and not have to travel around to different research institutions.
Interesting. So we do some tracing, and then they can do 3D models that anybody in the world could study.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's another one that involves transcribing some old text, right?
Yeah, that's another aspect of the story. You know, they have all these pages and pages and pages of notes from, you know, the early 20th century, I think even from the 19th century. And you could have that one sad graduate student sitting in a basement transcribing it all. Or you could say, hey, citizen scientists, do you want to be part of it? And a lot of people are really interested in reading the very old field notes. Some of them have incredible sketches of the artifacts as they were found, and basically just transcribing it so that, again, they can be digitally reproduced and available to anyone in the world.
Now, here's one that doesn't involve sitting in front of the computer, Nerds for Nature. I think it's on the West Coast, but there might be other things going on like it around the world. What is Nerds for Nature?
Yeah, and I love this organization because it is all about getting out and, getting up to your knees in mud. It started in the San Francisco Bay Area, but it is expanding, and they also have some online tools. So if you're interested in being part of it, you can stage your own bio blitz, it's called, in your area. What's a bio blitz?
Sounds dangerous.
No. Trust me, no organisms are harmed in a bio blitz. Basically, you grid off an area in your neighborhood, in your local park, wherever, and you and your friends just take a census of every living creature in there. It helps to build wildlife census population data. It helps to understand even the health of certain areas or how certain areas are changing from one ecology to the next. And it's, again, gathering data, helping scientists do things that they just don't have the time or resources to do.
Now, there's a final one that you write about Hurricane Sandy. It's a cool opportunity for people to check out photos before and after the hurricane and decide what changes they see.
Yeah, and I have to admit, of all the projects, this is the one closest to my heart for a couple of reasons. This is, again, a project that we do it better than the computers. If you show the computer a photo of the Jersey Shore before and after Hurricane Sandy and ask the computer, hey, what's changed? The computer freaks out, gets off your desk, runs into a corner and starts weeping because there is just too much going on in the photo. There's a difference between water and land. There's a difference between, say, hillside, grassland, meadow, beach, stone beach, sand beach. There are all these variations happening in the same time. The computer can't handle it. However, a human can look at it and say, okay, I see that road shifted there, the sand beach shifted there, this is gone, this is here. So basically, humans are looking at all these before and after photos, and there's a short online tutorial about how to do it, what terms to use, for example. You put in the data, that data gets processed, and it's helping the U.S. Geological Survey understand things like, okay, how far inland did the water really travel? How much of the beach was destroyed? It's helping them identify even, say, floodplains or flood areas at risk of storm surge, and they're going to be using this information to figure out, as other storms come up the coast, hey, how can we help people? Who needs to be evacuated? Who is at risk? What can we do to mitigate the damage? So it's a real kind of real-world thing. And for me personally, I grew up in the New York area, so a lot of the photos, I'm like, hey, I was there.
Well, Gemma, a lot of great stuff we could participate in. Thanks for joining us again.
Always fun. Thank you.
That was Gemma Tarlek, Senior Associate Editor at Discover Magazine, based in Waukesha. She was with us to share some citizen science projects.
And you can see all of Discover Magazine's citizen science project suggestions on the Central Time Facebook page. And by the way, head over there. Are you doing something like this, either one of the projects Gemma just told us about or something else? I know there were big protein folding crowdsourced things a few years back. Backyard astronomy that you're sharing your data. Let us know if you are involved in citizen science at the Central Time Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR.